tune, we once again bring to the microphone the friends of Angus Prune. Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall and Bill Oddie. And after that, there's only one thing to say.
It's I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Again. Oh.
Good morning, Miss Bedsock.
Morning, Mr. Prune.
My mail, Miss Bedsock.
On your desk, Mr. Prune.
Miss Bedsock.
Yes, Mr. Prune.
Why aren't you wearing a skirt this morning? Oh, there it is.
Yes, Mr. Prune. Mr. Rothwell will be in at 10, sir, and Mr. Bondage at 11.
Miss Bedsock.
Yes, Mr. Prune.
Isn't it time we stop playing games with one another?
Mr. Prune.
Don't you think this farce has gone on long enough?
Mr. Prune.
Haven't we spent too long over this ridiculous pretense?
Mr. Prune!
Would you mind terribly if I called you Rosie? After all, we've been married 14 years. Even our children are beginning to talk.
Well, it's natural for two-year-olds.
Mm. But it would be better out in the open.
It always is.
I don't mean that. I mean about what you mean. I mean about what I mean. Rosie.
Angus.
Take a letter, Miss Bedsock. Damn it, you know I love you. I know we agreed we wouldn't let marriage ruin our business relationship or interfere with our export drive. I know we said we wouldn't let sex come between the paperclips and the stenography of life. But damn it, I love you, I love you.
Where do you want that sent, sir?
That wasn't my letter, that was my love, my love.
Mr. Prune, if you insist on bringing sex into business, I shall have to get off your knee.
All right. To the President of the Board of Trade, I reference the P of the BOT, sir. It has come to my attention, I love you, from our letter of the 21st, where you said, are you comfortable, my sweet, that the tariff rate must be altered. I can only say your knees are nice this morning. We must expand our growth rate. Darling, our rate of exchange can be stepped up if you, with your wonderful legs, are going ahead as planned. What are you doing for dinner this evening? I trust we shall meet shortly. I love you and want you. Yours sincerely, Angus Prune.
That was the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
That was a letter. They're very friendly at the Board of Trade. Oh, Rosie.
Please, Miss Bedsock.
Miss Bedsock, I think... I mean, what I... It's time we moved into the same bedroom.
Mr. Prune.
You should have got over your nervousness by now. It's 14 years. Do you think Garth looks like me?
Yes, he's your son.
How?
Mr. Prune, this is unseemly. I can't sleep with my boss.
But it was all right before we were married.
You weren't married then, and I was your personal secretary.
But you're still my personal secretary.
But you're a married man. Think of your wife.
It's another man, isn't it? One of my employees.
You don't have any employees.
Is it the managing director?
Yes.
But I'm the managing director.
Yes. I'm leaving you, Angus. I'm going away with him. I've told him about us. We're finished, the pair of us. I'm going away with you.
How does he feel about this?
I don't know.
Well, ask him.
How do you feel about this?
I don't know.
He doesn't know.
Well, that makes two of us.
Aren't you jealous of him?
Should I be?
Yes.
Yes, I'm jealous. I'll kill him.
Oh, Angus, don't do anything silly.
There. I've killed him.
But you're him.
Oh, dear. Take a will, Miss Bedsock.
Good evening, and it's welcome to Bonnie Scotland, and I hope you're ready to come a while with me with Jimmy McClester and his light orchestra. Oce and ah, and very nice too. Well, here in the Temperance Hall, Kilferrit, Glasgow, we have just started the programme with a gay McTavish.
Oh, you cheeky wee thing.
Written by Jamie McClester, especially for money. And jolly ethnic it is, too. And now we have Angus McPrune Poddy to sing for us that lovely BBC Scottish song, The Gordons A. Say Muckle, Tay the Lassie O. His E.E.
Well, wheel that day, I was a shishmo. My mother would cuckle me unto the floor. She cackle me fine and she cackle me reet, but she stopped cackling new. Ah, she's under 6 feet. We are muckily doo 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 man. He took him a lassie for the town of Arban, but her brother was foxy as a brush as strong. Not my mother joined further for very long. We are Macamino, Macamino, Macamino,
Macamino. And I would like to say hoots ma na wa with you and the tang of the heather, but I find the whole thing much too embarrassing. It is jolly colourful here tonight in Kilferret Hall with the plastic kilts and paper heather and polythene haggis and all the other BBC Scottish things. And now the McCrankenbuch dancers with the rhubarb tartan. Who says they haven't got a culture? So it's far the well from the who of the Helans and all of us here in Kilferret, and here to put an end to the whole thing is the BBC Light Artillery.
Next, please. Name?
Leslie Grapevine.
Mr. Grapevine, what do you do?
I do bird impressions. I beg your pardon.
Okay, Mr. Grapevine, take your time. Get used to the stage when you're ready.
Cut the little loop! Cut the little loop! Little, little cut! Little, little cut!
What on earth is that?
If that was a cock turning round and going backwards.
Cock going backwards. Mr. Grapevine, do you do anything else except bird impressions?
Well, I do animal impressions.
All right, well, let's have some animal impressions, then.
I wandered lonely as a cloud, moo, that floats on high o'er vales and hills, moo.
I thought you said you did animal impressions.
That was a cow reciting Wordsworth.
Cows don't recite Wordsworth, Mr. Grapevine.
Well, mind you, that's the difference, you see. That's what makes my act different from all the others. But then I've got a giraffe singing Gilbert and Sullivan, a vulture who whistles Negro spirituals, and a barking cat.
A barking cat? Well, let's see that then, shall we?
Woof, woof!
Well, I remember those languid summer days I spent in the hot clutches of Timothy. In the hold of the sloop as it slipped gently through the placid Caribbean waters off Bognor Regis. As a honeymoon, it was quite one of the sweetest I've ever had. And we kept discovering exciting new things, like the 15 stowaways. And the broken rudder. And the running water underneath the floorboards. How well we got to know one another's ways. First I learned his ways, and then he learned my ways. I never knew there were so many ways. How wonderful it was to be alone at last with no one to see us, except the 15 who were sharing our bunk. But we were never bored for a moment. First, Timothy would never be bored for a moment, and then I would never be bored for a moment. And three times, we were never bored for a moment once. I even found Timothy one day fly fishing with the zip from an old pair of trousers. He's not much good at fishing, but I love him. He's not much good at that either. But he's good for a laugh, and we had several at his expense. We didn't lose many people overboard, just two waiters and Timothy. This was inconvenient, yes, But luckily, we had a spare set of waiters. Timothy's not much good at swimming. First I failed to save him, then the 15 stowaways failed to save him. Then we all failed to save him together. How well I remember those languid summer days I spent in the hot clutches of 15...
Good evening. I have with me here in the studio this evening a Mr. Potter.
Mr. A. Potter, not a Mr. Potter.
A Mr. A. Potter. I've got another one. Now, Mr. Potter, I believe that you have some sort of scheme to attract more spectators to horse racing.
Yes, I have.
What is your scheme, Mr. Potter? Jim, have a record ready.
My plan. Oh, yes, well, it's quite simple, basically. Or quite simply, it's very basic. Ha, 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 ha.
Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. Mr. Potter, do go on.
Oh, well, it was my idea that we introduce as the second event on the card at Ascot.
Yes.
That's the royal meeting, of course. A nude lady's handicap.
Hey, what?
A nude lady's handicap.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pudio. Goodbye. Where's the record?
Well, get one.
A nude lady's handicap involving some 19 nude ladies.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Potter. Well, I think we've heard enough to get the general idea. Thank you very much indeed for coming along.
The net. Get the net.
And they start off fully clothed in evening dress with tiaras and all the other accoutrements of nobility.
Well, the chloroform, then. Yes, well, very interesting, Mr. Potter. Tell me, do you have any hobbies?
And the familiar cry of they're off is replaced by off with them. And the ladies divest themselves in time to various melodies.
Yes, at this point, Mr. Potter, I don't suppose you'd be interested in selecting this gramophone record, would you?
Oh, no. No, thanks. And then they set off down the track and have 14 seconds compulsory posing at the furlong marker.
Shut up! Fascinating, Mr. Potter. Well, thank you very much. I wonder if you'd be kind enough to step into this large metal box to answer a few questions on market gardening. Thank you.
The processing is very, very
quick. Oh, dear. Well, Mr. Potter appears to have climbed into a large tin box and driven out of the studio. But I'll be back here at the same time again next week with some even more interesting people from about town. Good night.
Gone mad. She said, well, she's a fish man.
now the moment you've all been waiting for. But hurry back as soon as you're finished, because... it's time for part two of our 14-part serial in two episodes, The Curse of the Flying Wombat. Last week, we left our hero, Tim Brown Windsor, aboard the Flying Wombat, captained by the mysterious Captain Cleese. As they set sail on their mysterious mission, the cabin boy, Jim Ladd, shows him a bomb planted by the evil owner of the kosher Chinese laundry, Casey O'Sullivan. Will the bomb explode? Will the forces of evil triumph? Is this the end for our hero?
Looks like it.
No, I'm afraid not. In the nick of time, I threw the bomb through a nearby porthole.
Oh, good.
Into the first mate's cabin. I decided to report the incident to the captain. Excuse me, where's the captain?
He's forward.
You don't have to tell me, Ducky.
No. What I mean is, he's in his cabin.
Yes?
It's me, Tim Brown Windsor. Will you open the door?
I can't, I'm in the bath.
Well, can I come in?
All right, but you'll have to use your own soap.
Captain, we are in great danger.
It's all right, you can trust the crew not to talk. And now I must leave you.
Captain, why are you putting a dog collar and lead on that seagull?
Well, I'm just going to take a turn around the deck.
That's not very funny.
No, it's the albatross that has a sense of humor.
Captain Cleese, tell me, what is the real purpose of this trip?
Well, I can tell you, but in the strictest confidence. Now, listen. There's a little yellow idol to the north of Kathmandu.
Good grief.
There's a little marble cross below the town.
Isn't that where a broken-hearted woman tends the grave of Mad Karoo?
Yes, and the yellow god forever gazes down. Now, the point is...
He was known as Mad Karoo to all the subs at Kathmandu, you know.
Really? Yeah. Well, our mission...
He was hotter than they felt inclined to tell.
Yes, our mission...
He was worshipped on the ranks for his something-something pranks.
Would you allow me
and
to...
And the colonel's daughter smiled on him as well.
Be that as it may, our object... is to retrieve the green eye of the little yellow god. Unfortunately, an unscrupulous crook is on our trail, and we must get to Kathmandu before him. Now, just sign this contract to appear in my next film.
Why?
I just want to put you in the picture.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, back at the kosher Chinese laundry.
Yeah, boss, the bomb didn't work.
I know it didn't work.
Well, are we going to stop them getting their hands on the green eye of the little yellow dog?
No, little yellow god. You twit, god, not dog.
Oh, what a pity. I like little yellow dogs. I once had a little yellow dog license. Yeah. I did have a dog, but he was called Spit.
No, you mean Spot.
No, I mean Rover. Yeah. Spot was my grandfather.
Never mind. Let's go after them. Come on.
Yeah, and when we catch them, we can hold them up to bun point.
No. You mean gunpoint. Gunpoint, not bun point.
But I haven't got a gun.
Oh, well, in that case, you'll just have to use a bun. Try and bluff them.
Yeah. We'll puff them. To Kathmandu.
What? Yeah, no, no. Yeah, you've got it right.
Oh, no, I was trying to say Wimbledon.
The Kathmandu.
While Casey O'Sullivan and Masha Wilkins plot in the laundry, the crew of the Flying Wombat carouse in between decks.
Splice the main brace, believe it, I'll eat you. You scurvy landlubbers, eat up, waiters. Pass the maggots.
And another pot of seagull jam.
Eat up, Mr. Brown Windsor, sir, you rat.
Could I have a clean spoon?
A clean spoon? You use your hands for jellyfish custard. Bosun, a toast. A toast.
Mateys, I give ye Schopenhauer.
Schopenhauer, long may he think.
And now a toast to our journey's end, Kathmandu.
How did you know we were going to Kathmandu?
It's on the tickets.
Good morning. Sorry to bother you, but could you tell me where the first-class sun lounge is?
Certainly, sir, you swab, sir. Up the stairs, turn right and along the plank.
Oh, thank you very much, pirate.
But who was he?
What? Shh, lad. It was Mr. Sadler, our first-class passenger. And keen amateur shark bait. Now, what was we discussing?
We was discussing Great Admiral. You know, I sailed under the great Tom Arch.
Never heard of him.
Oh, but surely you've heard of Admiral T. Arch?
No.
Mr. Brown Windsor.
Yes?
Go and look him up in the reference line.
Aye, sir.
Our hero strode out of the room, paused again without stopping, stopped pausing, shook hands with himself, fainted twice, and set off down the corridor. A lean brown smile playing across his ears. Suddenly from a cabin came a scream. A nice scream. In fact, a very nice scream.
His suspicions were aroused.
Look, it happened to me. I want to tell him.
I was watching.
Oh.
Pushing open the cabin door, he stepped inside, trod on a billiard ball, fell through a hoop, struck his knee on a gong, wedged his head in a basket of crayfish, and was attacked by a large pig.
So far, so good.
Pushing the pig into a drawer, he stood up.
The swine!
He said.
Hello?
A voice came across the room and shook hands with him.
Jim, lad, what are you doing here?
I had to see you alone.
I'll go then.
No, no. No. I need money.
I'll lend you £10.
Ah, alone at last. Tim, you must know that I'm not Jim Ladd at all, but an English gentlewoman of high birth.
Oh, I wanted the top bunk.
No, no. I am the Right Honourable Fiona Rabbit Vacuum.
Fiona! My fiancé!
Tim, darling.
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 But a sudden noise interrupted their reverie. And what a reverie.
Oh, oh, what a reverie.
Anyway, it was interrupted by a cry from the lookout in the crow's nest.
Cry!
He'd been carried off by a very large crow. In the confusion that followed, nobody noticed that the ship was heading straight for a reef of jagged rocks. Suddenly...
What was that?
You may well ask. We've struck the rocks. I told you it was bad luck to steer straight onto the rocks. Take to the boats!
Help!
Is this the end for our intrepid hero? Is this the end of the Flying Wombat? Will Casey O'Sullivan and Masha Wilkins beat them in the race for the green eye of the little yellow god?
Will the Flying Wombat ever reach these distant shores?
What shores?
A pint of bitter, please.
Where was Marty, son of the Wonder Horse, on the night of the crime?
Anyway, do try to listen next week to this jolly good serial, and we'll probably be doing episode 4 or 3. No, episode 3, that's it. And it might be quite exciting and quite good, so do try and hear it. Don't worry if you miss it. It doesn't matter. We won't be upset. Is that all right?
And so the Angus Prune Tune brings to an end another Puma-ridden edition of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, which was written this week by Graham Chapman, John Cleese, Graham Garden, Eric Idle, and Peter and David Lund. Those taking part were, as usual, Tim Brooke Taylor.
He's the handsome one.
John Cleese.
He's the famous one.
David Hatch.
No comment.
Joe Kendall.
She's the trendy one.
And Bill Oddie.
Now, he's the one who sings his songs, and he writes them. He's fantastically talented. As a matter of fact, he wrote some of the
And the rest of the music was provided and played by Dave Lee, and the production was in the hands of Humphrey Barclay, which were hot and clammy. We're breaking up now, so perhaps you'll join us again next week in time to hear John Otto Cleese say...
It's I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Again.